Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Many college-bound students are starting to get responses on their college applications. Others will learn their fate in the spring. But as tough as the application process may seem right now, it's nothing compared to what teens face in their first college semester, particularly if they're living away from home. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back today with a panel of college students just hours out of their freshman semesters. They'll share what they didn't expect and what teens and parents should be preparing for now. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. He's the author of the Dear Dr. Wes series of books and a forthcoming guide to successful living with ADHD. That book is titled I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. And Wes, always good to have you.
It's nice Happy to holidays. Be here on this beautiful, balmy Missouri-Kansas border day.
Tell me about it. He's joined by Katie Gio. She's a former co-author of Double Take. She's a freshman at Kenyon College in Ohio. And Katie, nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Emily Van Schmoos is also back. She's a freshman at Drake University in Des Moines. Emily, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Nick Kraske is here. He's a freshman at DePaul University in Chicago, and he just happens to be one of my two favorite sons. Nick, how are you?
What's up, Dad?
Welcome. Well, Wes, you work in Lawrence, a college town, and you see students from KU and most of the other area colleges, including UMKC. You know, what seems to hit kids right between the eyes during their freshman years in college?
Well, the list is long, but the two big ones are the issue of self-regulation, you know.
Self-regulation. There's a concept for you.
Yeah. When your young gentleman was at home, you had a little say over perhaps when he came home and if he studied and if he things like that. And then when the young people get away and get out on their own, it is a whole new world that doesn't have a parent to tell them what to do. And colleges have quit doing that many years ago. And then the other thing that is problematic for kids is just inadequate preparation. And that may be because of their school not preparing them well, or it may be because they didn't take the right classes, or it may be they took all the right classes and they just weren't rigorous enough. So those are the two biggies.
Well, Nick, I gather that at Shawnee Mission East, you were prepared well enough. So if that wasn't an issue for you, what hit you right between the eyes when you went to school?
Yeah, that really wasn't too much of an issue as far as most of my assignments were papers. And when it comes to really lengthy papers, Shawnee Mission East did a really good job. I had a lot of great English teachers. Shout out. Can I give a shout out to to Miss Beachy if she's out there? Miss Bonjour. I had some amazing English teachers. But you know, yeah, that wasn't really too big of a struggle for me.
What was the struggle, if there was a struggle?
You know, I guess just, yeah, kind of like what you were talking about, just balance and, you know, figuring out a schedule that works for you with classes and, you know, still being able to, because I didn't really know anybody going into DePaul, so it was really kind of just balancing a social life and meeting friends, but also with getting homework done.
Was it hard to meet friends coming out of the gate?
You know, it wasn't too difficult because everyone's kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
As far as, I mean, like 50% of DePaul is in-state kids, and then the other 50% are just kids from all around. So everyone's kind of in a similar situation, so everyone was really friendly. And
Emily Van Schmoos, tell us about your experience up in Drake University in Des Moines. What hit you between the eyes as you started out?
I guess the biggest thing for me was learning how to manage my time.
Yeah.
Because for me, at least, high school was start at 7 in the morning, class until 3, go home, homework, maybe hang out with friends, go to bed at a reasonable time, and then the same thing every day, every day of the week.
You had a schedule sort of handed to you.
Yeah, basically. And then going to college, every day I would have different classes, different times, maybe just one or two classes. And then, so certain days I'd have class from maybe 8 to 10, and then I'm done for the day. And so I can't just go home and
sleep all day. Turn it on, right? Yeah,
or watch Netflix for hours. I have to kind of tell myself, if you don't start this paper now, you're going to be finishing it at 5 in the morning with class at 8 tomorrow. So,
how difficult was that for you, sort of navigating all that free time and sort of getting yourself to get going on that paper that was due a couple weeks down the road?
It was kind of difficult at first just because I was used to having such a structured schedule, and I was used to, okay, this paper is going to take an hour and I can just do that after dinner and it'll be fine. But then the papers were a lot more they were a lot more lengthy, and we had to do a lot more research. And so they took a lot longer than I was expecting. And then I found myself staying up very late in the hallway, so I didn't wake up my roommate at 2 or 3 in the morning trying to finish papers.
So to what extent did your professors sort of take you aside or explain to you in your first classes, now, you know, Emily Van Schmoos, you're going to have to spend a little bit more time on this and get started? Did they take your hand and hold it for you, or were you pretty much on your own right out of the gate?
We were pretty much on our own, except we have to take – it's a mandatory first-year seminar. And so the point of the class is to kind of get you accustomed to college life and homework and what the expectations are. And so when in that class, our professor sat us down, and we had what was called the Freshman 15. So the first 15 minutes of every class – he just kind of talked to us about something different. And the first one that we talked about was homework, and you have to actually like spend time on it and make sure that you're putting in all the effort.
Sort of a reality check every day. You had a class, sort of an orientation to Chicago, Nick.
Yeah, Discover Chicago.
Did that class deal with some of the issues that she was just describing?
Yeah, it sounds like it was a really similar idea. Just, you know, there was a couple teachers and there was a couple TAs that you were to kind of to schedule one-on-one meetings with and just to check in with them and make sure that your transition was going all right.
So there was some help, sense of a hand reaching out.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
Katie, how about you when you were going to school at Kenyon College way out in Ohio? How did you handle this notion of all this free time that was just handed to you all of a sudden?
You know, I didn't have any of those classes where it's a, you know, a gradual introduction to college life. I was thrown into a 300-level Spanish literature course where we had a syllabus that said, you have to read this book and have this essay turned in by this date, and you did it. So I think that was a really rough time for me at first, you know, learning that I was completely on my own out there. I didn't have anyone telling me, you know, here's how much time you're going to have to spend on this assignment. So I was that person who was in the library on a Friday night researching for my Spanish essay. And so I actually started out probably doing the opposite of what a lot of people have, whereas I was spending too much time, getting started too early, being too stressed. And so a lot of the work I had to do this semester was learning not to be so much of a perfectionist, knowing that, you know, whereas in high school you might be able to get A's pretty easily if you work hard. In college, sometimes you just have to be okay doing as much as you can and getting enough sleep. And so by the end of the semester and by finals, I was, you know, learning to manage my time, going between tasks, not staying up all night studying.
That's so interesting. You mentioned this notion of working on homework on a Friday night. I remember at the University of Wisconsin in Madison back in the mid-1970s when I went to school.
Here we go.
You know, here we go. Here's a dad story, Nick. But I remember like my second semester in February having to go to the library on a weekend night for the first time my freshman year and being really depressed. Thinking, oh, God, I've got to study on a weekend night. Something is really wrong here. And the issue, Wes, is a lot of kids don't realize that sometimes they've got to spend a weekend night in the library,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've been to your alma mater.
You know what that's all about, right?
Sure. It's, yeah.
You brush your teeth with beer at that school. Yeah.
That, I was working that joke up, Steve, right there.
Yeah.
When you're in Madison, you ask people where a good place is to have dinner, and they tell you what kind of lager they have there. They just forget about dinner. So that
there's some truth to that, Wes.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, here's the downside of that, and it goes right back to the issue of self-regulation, that if young people want to go to college to be drunk from Wednesday to Sunday, they don't have to pay tuition for that. That's a freebie. And if that's your goal in late teenhood and early adulthood, then you don't really probably want to go to college. Some partying is going to go on, some fun is going to go on, but it's too expensive and too critical to turn into a Wednesday to Sunday party. So the Friday night in the library sounds rather draconian, I must admit. I don't believe I did that. But I think more nights in the library than at the bar are a key to self-regulation and success.
Well, Katie, you know, a kid listening to this, a high school senior who, you know, may not have the discipline that you seem to have, or even the parents of that kid listening to this, what advice would you give them? How do you sort of learn that sense of time management and self-discipline that's going to help you succeed in college where you're spending all this money to begin with?
Well, first I would tell them, do not aspire to be like me. I'm aspiring to be more like that person, because you need to find a happy medium, really.
That's been hard for you.
It has been. And I am so shocked to find that in the past month I have attained some semblance of a social life, because I never had it in high school. And I think that really speaks to the importance of finding a college where you feel at home. But as for a person who might not find it enthralling to go to the library at, you know, midnight on a Saturday night and look up the works of Federico Garcia Lorca, I think that what's really important is that you find, first off, a place, a physical place where you feel comfortable and where you feel like you can have a productive study time. I cannot emphasize enough how much environment has played a role in my success in academics, because the first few weeks I felt lost. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where to study or how to study. And so I found little comfortable places around campus, like on the third floor of a certain building or in this certain room of the library. And that would be my study place. That would be where I would go at a certain time and for a scheduled amount of time work on a certain class. And
yeah,
that structure really helped.
And that place just felt right for you. It was just a visceral reaction.
And
to that
it has
space.
To be different for every person. You know, I know some people who study in the science quad exclusively, and they're music majors.
So. Yeah, Nick, you're nodding your head. That you found a place too, or
yeah, I did. Oh, yeah. Whoa, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to what she said. I think it's really kind of all about just knowing yourself and figuring out what works for you. And yeah, if studying in the science quad works, then that works. And if you know that you're a perfectionist and you know that you're only going to be happy and your paper's only going to be 100% if you stay in the whole weekend, then that might be what you have to do one weekend.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you don't have a paper due the next weekend, then you can hang out with friends.
Hey, but for some kids, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, for a lot of kids it is. And I think for everyone, it's hard in the beginning, really, when you have that much free time and you do have to really learn how to, you know, make your own schedule and develop your own routine. It is kind of an adjustment at first, but again, I do think high school, for me in particular, did a great job in preparing me and figuring out what works best for me as far as study habits and times to study and whatnot. So.
You know, Emily, what about for you when it came to homesickness? Did you have it? How did you deal with it? When did it hit you?
I went to college not expecting – well, I guess, okay, graduating high school, I was not expecting at all to be homesick. I was like, okay, I'm going to get out. I'm going to leave. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm going to be on my own. This is going to be great.
I'm not looking back over my shoulder here. I'm gone.
Yeah.
Gone, baby, gone. Yeah.
When it got time to, you know, say goodbye to all my friends, and a lot of my friends left before I did, so I was home, and then I had to go to welcome weekend, and I was like, okay, this is going to be hard, but it'll be fine. And so the first few weeks, I was totally fine. I wasn't homesick at all, and I was like, you know, I can go out and I don't have to be home at a certain time. This is great. And then after a few weeks, I was kind of missing home a little bit, but I was still like, no, I'm not going back until I have to. And then I guess it was about a month or so until I was like, okay, I need to go home because I miss home. I miss Lawrence. I just want to go back.
So maybe October sometime. Mm-hmm. Am I guessing that's about right? Yeah.
Yep.
How many times did you come home your first semester?
I think I came home probably 4 or 5 times.
No kidding.
But yeah. I'm an only child, and so my parents came up to visit me as well. So we kind of alternated between having them or a friend come to visit me and then going back home.
The homesickness ever become sort of overwhelming? Was it crushing at times or not really?
Not really by itself. There were definitely a few times where I was already stressed. I had a big test and maybe I wasn't feeling well. And then on top of all of that, I was homesick, which kind of made it worse. But it wasn't ever so bad that I was like, I just need to go home right now and not come back. It wasn't ever that bad. So,
Katie, homesick or not?
For a while, every time I saw a silver Toyota minivan that looked like my mom's, I would break down in tears on the spot. Yes, homesickness was a pretty big problem. You know, first night without my parents, I was curled up in my bed calling my mom saying, Mom, I can't do this. Oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing. All of these kids are from prep schools in New York City. Where am I?
Yeah.
And it did take a while. You know, I had been told during the summer, like, you're going to go to orientation and make the best friends right off the bat. And that didn't happen. You know, it takes a lot of work. And so the I mean, time is, I think, the biggest medicine for homesickness. I wish I had a better answer than that. But the other thing is that I found a lot of extracurricular opportunities that really spoke to me, where I really felt like I had a family.
Like what?
The Kenyon Review is number one, absolutely. It's
Is it a student newspaper?
No, it's actually a professional literary magazine run by my college, and my advisor happens to be the editor. And so he's a wonderful, wonderful man, and I have been in his office crying many times, and he always has a box of tissues for me and a hug. He's wonderful.
That's nice.
But so on the Kenyon Review, I get to go in and be with adults and other students and do meaningful work, and that's where I've met a lot of my really good friends. And so I think that for anyone struggling with homesickness at college, instead of going out with the specific purpose in mind of sitting down with someone and becoming best friends at the dining hall, find an extracurricular opportunity or a class where you feel really comfortable and where your interests are shared by a lot of other people, and that's where you're going to find your good friends.
Wes, you agree with that. Wes Crenshaw.
I do, and I was chuckling over here because I was calling Emily a cheater this morning in terms of her homesickness plan because she was coming home so much. But that's one of the workarounds that you do, is to sort of gradually disconnect from the home environment. And whereas Katie only was able to make it back twice, she had to really do the trial by fire in that situation. The big thing I tell, and tomorrow's column's actually about this, the big thing I tell students is you do not want to surrender to homesickness your first year. People will get home for the holidays. It's one of the reasons I wanted to do this show this time, to sort of speak about that. And it's hard to go back. You just can't believe that these parents that you despised so much through adolescence are now the most important people in the world, and you don't want to go, and you need to go, and you need to stay until May and make no other plan. And I would say 75 or 80% of the time, if you don't change up before May, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
Hang in there till the end of the year.
You know, Emily and Katie have just been talking about how much they, you know, were homesick and how much they missed their parents. I'm going to turn to my son now, who did not come home his first semester at DePaul University in Chicago. And I don't recall you ever telling us you were homesick, which may begin to speak about how valuable we've been in your life over the last 19 years. But
couldn't get far enough away.
Couldn't get far enough away. Well, were you homesick?
You know, I think for the first month, kind of like you guys were saying, there's just so much, it's all such a whirlwind, especially, when you don't really know anybody and you're making all these new friends and, you know, you're getting acclimated to the new environment and you're getting used to the new study habits and whatnot. I think it's just, it's so much coming at you at once that for at least, I think, a month or maybe even 2 months, I felt like I didn't even have time to really sit down and process how homesick I really was. And then after a couple months, I started, you know, talking to a lot of my friends about break and, you know, starting to miss a lot of my friends and talking to you guys on the phone. And I did get homesick after a while, for sure.
It seemed to take a while because when I came up to visit you in October, we were walking around. I asked you a few times, are you homesick? And you were like, nope. Nope.
Yeah,
not
no.
Not in the least, daddy-o.
Yeah, I don't think I was quite yet in October. But, eventually I definitely did. I felt like it was so fast-paced up there, and you're just learning so much that didn't really have time for that to soak in.
Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking with three college freshmen about their adjustment process to going away from home and going to college and what that's all like. We're also visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw for one of his regular monthly visits. If you want to join our conversation, whether you're a student or a parent and have a question about what this process might be like for you going forward, maybe you have a senior in high school this year, what you're up against next year, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @KCURUptodate. Emily Van Schmoos, you know, talk to me a little bit about fitting in and how did you go about this process of fitting in with this strange new group of people, none of whom I assume you knew at all before you walked onto the campus of Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa?
I went to Drake knowing, I knew one person from my high school, and then there were two girls from the other high school in Lawrence that I didn't know as well. So I knew them, but I wasn't I didn't really know anyone else. And
so you were a stranger.
Yeah, for sure.
Literally and figuratively and all that stuff. Yeah.
So I went to welcome weekend the first week that I was there. I hadn't met my roommate before I got there, which was kind of crazy because I was really worried about that all summer.
That's where I'm going next. Yeah.
Yep. And so I guess I was kind of overwhelmed at first. I was like, I have to meet all of these people and make all of these friends in a day. And so, so I'll have people to hang out with this week.
Yeah.
And so I did make a lot of really good friends that I was with that weekend, but because we were all living together, we did activities with the people that are in our first year seminar, and we also lived with those people, which was a really nice setup.
In the dorm kind
of
thing?
We all lived in the same hallway together, which was really nice because we got to know them. And so we were familiar with each other, but it did take a while, to develop those friendships. But
The first 2, 3, 4 days, those crucial days when you're really new, they had activities for you to sort of reach out and connect with people, which is pretty common, I think, if I understand college life these days. They didn't have it when I was in school. They have it these days, I think.
Yeah, we had this weekend, which I don't even think was a weekend. I think it was like a Wednesday through Friday or something. But we had one older person, and we called them PMAX. It's like peer, mentor, academic, consultant, or something like that.
Whoa.
And so we had an older person, and I had a girl that was a sophomore, and then 20 students in a group. And so we did all of these icebreaker activities, which everyone hated, but I love icebreakers, so it was really fun for me. But we just kind of got to know each other, and it was still kind of awkward, because we were trying to be friendly, but we didn't know each other. And then we were all in the same first-year seminar class, so we actually went and had dinner with our professor for that class. And he kind of made us sit down and talk, and he was like, well, this is college. This is what you can expect. You should all become friends now. And so we kind of got to know each other, but then we also, like I said, we lived together in the same dorm, and so that was really nice to be able to, go brush your teeth at the end of the day and then end up talking to the girl across the hall because you knew her already, which was really nice. But then kind of looking past the first few days, like Katie mentioned, getting involved was the biggest way for me to meet friends and kind of develop those really strong friendships. I joined a sorority probably 3-4 weeks into school because we rushed pretty late. But that was kind of the biggest thing for me, especially because I was starting to get a little bit homesick, and it was kind of like a family away from home because you're immediately kind of welcomed into this group of, for me, it was, girls with all the same interests, and we could just go have a sisterhood event on a weekend and just kind of relax and kind of get away from stressing out about college.
Katie from Kenyon College out in Ohio, how about you? What was it like fitting in and trying to make your way that way?
That was a lot more difficult for me than fitting in academically. I think that, during orientation, all of the social events were definitely geared toward extroverts, and I am an introvert, so I do much better in small environments talking with a few people, whereas this was like the entire freshman class gets together and has a picnic, and that's very overwhelming to someone who, is coping with introversion. Not that it's a problem, but in environments like that, it can be really difficult to go out and just make friends off the bat. So,
Did you know anybody at Kenyon?
Zero. Absolutely zero.
Like,
I went in there with, no idea whom I was going to hang out with. But I think that, so orientation week was not fun for me. It was not my favorite part of Kenyon by any means.
Were you nervous a lot?
Incredibly nervous.
Yeah.
I would walk into an environment and see all of these people and think, I know no faces here. Yeah. I recognize nobody, even though it's a campus of 1,600. This is overwhelming. So it was better for me once I got into classes and started with extracurricular activities and then had people I recognized on campus and could sit with. But it takes a lot of work for a lot of people, I think. So I worked a long time to find people with whom I really wanted to hang out, and I didn't end up meeting my best friend until the week before Halloween. And, I mean, now we can barely be separated, but it will happen eventually. You will find a friend. But for some people, it just takes a long time.
Nick, how about you at DePaul? You didn't know anybody going in.
Yeah, didn't really know anybody. I think having a roommate that was really that I really liked a lot played a big role in that, because we would just kind of hang out together and meet people in that way. So that was really nice. But I don't know. I feel like in a lot of these situations, you kind of end up finding the people that you would naturally gravitate towards anyway. Like Katie mentioned, you know, when you join clubs or, you know, you pursue things that you're interested in, a lot of times I feel like even if you are an introvert or whatever, naturally, eventually you'll meet some people that you end up forming some pretty strong friendships with.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's really useful to compare and contrast that experience, because Emily says, I just loved those icebreakers. And Katie's like, it made me want to run away. Yeah. And that's such a good example of how the personality style fits with the college environment and how you have to sort of flex yourself and your experience. But in the end, Nick is exactly right. You'll find that connection.
And the challenges that colleges face trying to integrate this very, you know, diversified
yes.
group of individuals, trying to get them to come together.
Well, and I like Emily and I and Katie were talking a lot this morning about the seminar idea. So many colleges try to do a freshman seminar, and it often will fall flat because kids don't take it seriously, or they just see it as sort of a blow-off class. And the way Emily's is designed, people are listening and want to set it up well, call Drake, because what Emily's describing really made a lot of sense to me in acclimating kids to college, getting them in there, getting them talking about how they learned in high school, how different that is from learning in college, really setting them on the right path. And a lot of schools want to do that and can't quite find the right formula.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about adjusting to college with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and, again, Katie Guillo, Emily Van Schmoos, and my son, Nick Kraske. Again, we'll take your phone calls, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. In our second half, we'll turn to roommates, frats, sororities, and partying, and how all that fits in. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed Friday's Best Music of 2013 show, you'll find it in our reviewers' favorite local music of this year at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, more music, Christmas music of yesterday and today. We'll dig into what makes for a great Christmas song. This hour, we're talking with three college freshmen about their adjustments to higher education and what that's all involved, all about. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back. He's a board-certified family psychologist from Lawrence. He's with our joining our conversation today as well. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Let's go to Ethan from Kansas City, Missouri. Ethan, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
I just had a few pieces of advice that were given to me that really helped me kind of transition into undergraduate work. And also now I'm in medical school. It helped me transition there even as well.
You must have done something right if you're in medical school.
Yeah, I was listening to the comments about the weekends in the library, and I definitely can testify to spending some extra nights in there. But the first piece of advice was given to me by one of my academic advisors, and he said, never stop learning, because one day you'll have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know what that meant until I really transitioned into medical school. It's this idea of continuing to learn and being a lifelong learner, so that when you enter into new situations and new areas, you can adapt well, and you can survive, and you can, you know, thrive in, during and through change. So that was really important for me. And then the second piece of advice has kind of been echoed on the show already, was from my parents, who really pushed me to pursue what I was passionate about. I'm really above, you know, test scores or grades. They said, you know, find something that you're passionate about, that you're willing to pursue, and go after that. And, you know, all these other things will start to fall in place. And that was really important for me in undergrad and, you know, through medical school now.
Yeah. Ethan, appreciate the phone call. Appreciate the advice. Thank you.
We have,
have a good day.
In January, I'm going to bring in a couple of other advanced college students in and talk about a number of those issues. And one of them will be how do you wisely select a major that will work both as a career and as something you love? So I think it's an excellent point.
Emily, let's turn to the hot issue of roommates. How did you wind up with you have a roommate, I assume.
Yes.
How did the two of you come together?
We both went potluck, so we hadn't really met anyone at orientation or anything that we wanted to room with that was, I guess, like roommate single that didn't have a roommate already. And so we both just said, okay, put me with a random roommate. And we filled out a survey, but it wasn't really anything about our personality. It was just kind of, are you a messy person? Are you clean? Do you get up early? Do you like to stay out late? And so there wasn't kind of a lot to go on, and so I was pretty nervous. And
that's a real crapshoot, isn't it?
Yes, and I know several people that have gotten roommates that are switching roommates this semester.
A lot of swapping going on right now.
But I actually really like my roommate. We turned out to have kind of similar personalities, which was really nice, and a lot of similar interests. So.
Yeah, Nick, for you, it was something of a crapshoot, too. You ended up with a guy you didn't know at all. And how did that happen and how did it work out?
Yeah, we didn't meet at orientation or anything. We actually met through this online app called RoomSync, which the university promotes kind of through Facebook. And you can select, your habits, like we were talking about. You know, you like to stay up late at night, or are you a clean or messy person? And
what'd you put down for clean or messy?
I said clean. I wanted to play it safe,
which really startled me, to be honest with you. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I definitely put clean just in case.
Are you saying that people online aren't always who they present themselves to be? That's shocking.
I know. Right?
Well, it turns out in your college world, you're a little bit neater than me. You were at home.
Yeah,
just for
I
the
was.
Record. Yeah.
I was a lot. Yeah. For the people at home, I am a neat guy. But but no, I got really lucky with my roommate. It was a guy named John from Stillwater, Minnesota, your hometown. He turned out to be a really good fit. But my suite mates across the other guys that I share a bathroom with that my roommate and I are connected to, there was three guys living in one room, and they really had some big issues because a lot of it was musical clashes. One guy was really into heavy metal. And the other two were really into rap, so there was a lot of clashing there.
Yeah, but it's worked out.
But it's worked out great, yeah, for me. I got really lucky.
So. Yeah. Katie, how about you?
Well, I guess I'll be taking us to the other side of the spectrum, unfortunately.
the dark side.
Yes, yeah, so I don't want to scare any incoming freshmen. I assure you that very few situations turn out like this. But, you know, likewise, my school sends out a survey so that Housing and Res Life can magically select roommates to live together. And so I got there in August, moved in. My roommate had already been there for a pre-orientation seminar, and so she had a lot of friends who already were like half living in the room for a while. And there were just to start out with, a lot of problems. Like, she would tell me, I want you out of the room at this time so I can have it. And then she'd, you know, come in drunk at 3 a.m. She'd be screaming. Sometimes she'd be yelling at me for no apparent reason. She'd be on the phone with her parents screaming. So I'd leave and try to get into somebody else's room for a while. She wouldn't want me to lock the door. Was really angry with me a lot of the time. So it got to the point where
this
I felt
is the classic college
it
horror
is.
Story.
It's the cliche.
But it got to the point where I was too afraid to even go to sleep at night. So I would be walking around like a zombie, like trying to find somewhere to nap that wasn't in this room where two people had the key and I didn't trust the other person. So eventually I went to my academic advisor in about mid-September and said, I need help. I don't know what to do. I can't sleep. I can't be in there. I feel very unsafe and uncomfortable. And so he sent me first to the counseling center so that the counseling center could talk to Housing and Res Life for me, because Housing and Res Life really won't do a whole lot unless you have a lot of different people coming at Housing and Res Life saying this is a real problem. So I had my academic advisor and then my community advisor who lives in the dorm, and then also the counseling center all telling Housing and Res Life to get me a new a new room. And they did. They actually very quickly got me a single on a different floor.
Score.
And oh my God, it's so nice. It's also the biggest single that I've ever seen in my life, which is awesome. All of my friends are super jealous. But so, yeah, I moved in early October. That's why my mom was there to help me move in. And
then
it just so happens that my best friend was waiting to meet me on that floor. So now it's turned into a really great situation after all. So happy ending. It was just a rough few weeks.
I've never heard a story quite that dramatic. That's horrific.
You know, I actually I know somebody who has a story that I consider worse than mine. She's going to school elsewhere. She's an old friend of mine. And she had two roommates who actually started cyberbullying her, you know, texting her very nasty things, saying bad things about her on Twitter and Facebook.
Wow.
And then, you know, still the alcohol problem, the partying problem. And so she's been paying for her dorm, but she hasn't been living in it because she just doesn't feel safe there like I did. So she's moving as well.
So those are the dark side stories. Yeah, Wes.
Oh, I have heard these stories, as you can imagine. The and I have a lot to say about it. The hardest thing you'll ever do in life is live with someone. And up to the point
tell you get me a about it.
Up to the
20, I'm you, kidding, honey.
Don't tell
She's
your
listening
mom.
At home. Just kidding. Yeah.
And it is. It's like marriage. Roommating at college is like marriage without any of the benefits. You have all of the problems of marriage and none of the benefits.
Yeah, that's true.
And so my best advice for people is to generally not room with a friend. And people have defied me so many times on this, and even to the point where I have young people who are friends who agree to come in when they have problems as roommates and do basically couples therapy with their roommate. And even then, these usually end disastrously. It's putting too much hope in your friendship that then you have to live together, and it will often destroy both the roommating and the friendship. And when you're doing something like this, like in Katie's situation, we actually had a column one time. I don't think it was your year, Katie, but the person wrote in, and the letter was so terrible, I had to edit it down. And some of the things they said, I had to change. It said, my room smells like dirty sex. And I had to edit that out of the paper just to make it dirty. But imagine how terrible this was for this person.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is always be sure you really are having a problem with the roommate. And it's not just two people's personalities that don't match. That's something to learn to work out. In Katie's situation and all these serious ones, you have a contract with your university. And they really have to fulfill that housing contract and make it a safe enough environment for you. And I'm glad they fixed that for you. For students who are having that kind of a problem, go to that point and say, you've got a contract with me and you're not fulfilling it. I'm with somebody who's kind of dangerous or scary or filthy or won't stop boys from staying over. That's a big one right now.
Yeah,
people
I'm sure.
will let boyfriends and girlfriends just move in.
We call it being sexiled when you have to leave your room.
That's the term, sexiled.
Sexiled. Yeah. Well, if you're like Katie, you might end up with the best room in the joint as a result of all this, which is not a bad consolation prize here.
No, I'm not too unhappy with it.
Yeah. We're talking about adjusting to college with three college freshmen here and Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Kristen emailed this question. What advice would each panelist give to parents of new high school students to better prepare them for their college years? Who wants to grab that?
I'll take a crack right off the bat, and then I'm interested in what these folks think. The first thing is you want to set expectations for college. If you're cutting the check, you really want to say, here's what I expect in terms of performance and even in terms of major, because to be having your school paid for by a parent is somewhat of a privilege. So how you conduct yourself at college, the parent still has an investment in, because they don't want you having to move home and live there till you're 30.
Yeah.
The second thing is you've got to really stress independence over freedom. Young people have tremendous love of freedom and yearning for freedom and not a whole lot of skills at independence. And so parents need to work really hard to make kids independently successful.
And how do you do that? That's a mouthful, but how do you translate that?
Little things like have them do their own laundry.
Now,
that's their chore.
Concept.
Wait, boy. Nick, don't leave.
Now we're talking. I'm out of here. Oh, man.
The
score.
You absolutely, things like that are important. Give them a budget every month. on one of those little cards you get at Walmart. We're going to do a money show next year, and I'm going to explain better how to do this. Go in there and buy them that card. Give them a budget. It's going to be $200-$300. And then put they're in charge of that money to buy what they need, clothes, deodorant, pizza from Lou Malinati's up the street from your wonderful college.
Absolutely.
Then they have to think about participating in the economy. Too many kids, not Nick, get or Emily or Katie, get stuff for free. Stuff, you know, Xbox shows up and a car drives up in the driveway and, you know, everything is there. It's for free. And then they go to college and they haven't participated in the economy. So that's critical for building independence. And there's just a long list of them. And the problem with doing this, I'll warn you right now, is you must let kids fail in high school. They must fail in high school, or at least the possibility of failure must be there. Parents hover around and they, you know, check skyward every 30 minutes and see where the grades are and send an email to the child and follow them around. This will not be happening in college. Mm-hmm. Kids are 18. They don't even have to let parents see their grades. So the more you can let kids fall on their face or succeed of their own volition, the better they'll be able to handle success in college.
It's interesting.
And I feel like the more you fail, the more you kind of discover yourself.
Right.
And I feel like that's really important in high school, is just at least knowing, you know, enough about yourself to decide which college. And I think another big piece of advice I would give parents and kids is to, around junior year, you know, whenever they feel ready, is to actually visit a lot of these campuses, because we didn't really have any idea how important that was going to be before we actually started going to these different colleges and getting a feel for them.
It's very, very important, yes.
Yeah, and I feel like that was a really huge thing for us.
Yeah, just to checking it out.
You want to know how you feel in Chicago. You want
to
see what that feels like, if it feels good, if it matches with you. You can't do it if you're not there.
Any other advice for parents you guys would toss out?
You know, I guess, you know, sorry, Wes, but I probably did get a lot for free, I realize, as I look retrospectively on my life.
It doesn't show.
Well, I appreciate that. But the one thing that, I mean, my parents, I say all the time in every column I ever wrote for Wes, I said something about how wonderful my parents were, and I love them very much. And I appreciate that starting in about ninth grade, they, you know, stepped back and they did not check skyward ever. I was, you know, completely in charge of my grades. They probably wouldn't have cared very much if I had gotten a B or a C.
Well, maybe just to say, on behalf of the parents out there, just getting to know you a little bit, you know, Kate, I'm not sure any parent would need to worry about your grades very much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
The word conscientious was written for Kate.
Yeah, I think that's right, Katie. Yeah.
Oh, goodness, that's not necessarily a good thing. More like perfectionism. Yeah. That was written for me. But in any case, I really had to advocate for myself most of the time. And sometimes my parents would say, do you want me to get in contact with this teacher? And I would say, you know, no, because they were really encouraging me to be able to handle it myself. And that came in such that was so important for this first semester of college, because every time I had a problem, you know, I was out on my own in rural Ohio and had to go see the official I needed to see without, you know, having my mom hold my hand.
Yeah. What would you tell moms and dads out there?
I think the biggest thing for me that I would say, that kind of goes along with what Katie just mentioned about the hand-holding, is for parents not to kind of take care of everything for their kids. And I know for me, I did have to do laundry sometimes, and I did have to make dinner a couple times, but I wasn't prepared for other things.
How about
washing
the dishes after dinner? How does that fit in, too?
We have machines for that now.
I think one of the biggest things for me was I did take a car up to Des Moines with me, and I had pumped gas for myself all of one, maybe two times before I went up there. And so I had a little bit of car trouble with my tires. I was supposed to put air in them, but I was like, I don't know how to do that.
Who knew?
I had to go get my own gas, which was, you know, was fine, but it was also kind of a learning experience for me. And I guess I would just say not to, because my parents, if it was winter weather or whatever, which was really nice, but they would always take me places because I didn't really know how to drive in the snow.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I have 10 minutes to get to work and it's icy and snowy and I have no idea what to do. And so I guess just kind of making your kids figure things out, even though you have the ability to help them.
That's a little scary, Emily, mm-hmm. do that. How about, do you guys have jobs up at school? And how
yes.
does, it sounds like you do.
I do. I have a campus job. Drake actually guarantees any student if they want a job on campus, they can get one.
Right.
And so I have a job, and I didn't sign up for it, but I wanted a job and I had a work study. And so they said, well, just fill out this survey. And so I did about kind of my interests. And they called me and said, we want you to join the phone-a-thon. And I was like, okay, this will be fun. I just get to talk to people on the phone all day. Well, I have to call alumni and everything and ask them for money. And yeah. I'm not allowed to hang up until I ask four times for specific wow. amounts.
Oh.
And so at first, I absolutely hated it. I was like, this is not worth the money. I am quitting. But I stuck with it, and I'm learning to like it more.
Well, that's interesting.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Katie, how about you?
I am blissfully unemployed.
Yeah, yeah.
Samesies.
And you'll be maybe next semester. Okay.
Yeah, next semester.
Again, adjusting to college is our topic. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Rick from Independence called in to say when our daughter went to college in 1998, we made a big deal with her to get progress reports and see her grades or the financial support stopped, and it worked out great, is what he says.
I agree with that because it's one thing to be independent. It's another thing to be on the parents' dole and not performing. And parents want to reinforce the things they believe are important and not reinforce the things that are problematic. And so, you know, you have an investment in that education. It's okay to get a progress report.
Yeah. How about the whole Greek scene, sororities, fraternities? You know, Emily, you already sounds like you joined one and that was helpful for you out of the gate.
Yes.
Katie, did you go there?
No, not at all. And actually, my school doesn't rush until I think next semester. It's pretty late. But, you know, there are definitely fraternities on campus, not so many sororities. And the sororities do not have the privileges that the fraternities do for some reason.
Ah,
it's a
lawsuit.
Yeah, strange tradition. But anyway, I'm definitely not going to go there. I actually, you know, I am in the very, very small minority of students who do not drink. And so, you know, there are students at parties who go and just don't drink and have a great time. But that's not really what I'm interested in. And I've learned that you, surprisingly enough, don't really have to go to parties and drink and hang out with the frats in order to have a social life. So that's been nice.
Nick, how did you handle the fraternity sorority thing up at DePaul University in Chicago?
The Greek scene's not huge at DePaul. There's about 10 frats, I think, and about 10 sororities. So I got recruited for a couple of the frats, and I rushed just to meet some of the guys and have a good time. And then I ultimately decided that I kind of wanted to just go the independent route and do my own thing. I rushed during senior year. You know, I had a good time rushing up at KU, and it was definitely a ton of fun. But I kind of decided that if I was going to go to Paul, I'd probably do my own thing, whereas if I had gone to KU, I probably would have ended up being in a frat. So.
Well, Stevie, any advice on this whole question of do you join a frat or sorority or not?
Yeah, I do, and I'm going to expand on it quite a bit in January because we'll have a sorority girl and a guy from the honor dorms coming in to talk about the different experiences of different living arrangements. And I have come working in Lawrence to have a little more faith in the sorority and fraternity system than I used to, but probably that wouldn't be the one I would recommend. I'm a big fan of the honor dorms, the scholarship halls at KU particularly. I think they provide a lot of what fraternity is supposed to be about without quite as much of the accoutrements. But we'll be interested in what Sarah has to say next month about that. She will disagree with me.
All right. Bill from Overland Park. Bill, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. I need some help. I have a nephew going to school who is bombing out because he's completely unmotivated, doesn't know what he wants to do. His parents were the ultimate helicopter parents. He never failed at anything in high school. And he's a good kid, but he's just, you know, he's out and he doesn't drink or smoke or anything like that. He just doesn't do anything. And I'd like to help him, but I don't know what to do or if I even should try to help him. Any advice?
We did a whole show on this. You can catch the podcast on my website or through KCUR's website last year in about May because it's such a significant problem. 41% of kids who start college won't finish in 7 years. And
40,
so,
right, right, say,
I know
41%,
you always,
percent. That just
this always shocks
you. Staggers me.
Yeah, every time I say it. Yeah, yeah. It is true.
Because you're getting through in four, Bucko. That's where the money runs out. Yeah.
And some of those will finish, of course, but because they're just maybe changing majors or something. But a lot of them won't. And this country sends more kids to college than any other industrialized nation and flunks more of them out. And so you see this a lot, and this is what I refer to as a salvage job. And you really have to go into a gap year or two or three and get the young person into some other business. I have a kid right now. She's going back to college for the first time in, I think, 5 years because she just was not ready. And I think this may be the chance for her to do that. And we just have this idea that life is a conveyor belt. And you put kids on them, and at 18, they roll right off to college. And a lot of people just aren't ready for that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are out of time. But what a great conversation we had here talking about how to get ready for college, the big adjustment to college from high school. I want to thank Katie Gio, Emily Van Schmoos, and my son, Nick Kraske. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dad.
So good to have you guys. Thanks for coming in. And I want to thank Dr. Wes Crenshaw as well. Wes, always good to have you here, and happy holidays to you.
You too, Steve.
We'll see you next month. You bet.